Welcome to Period Drama Queens, a podcast exploring period dramas.
The drama, the periods.
The tropes, the frissons.
The quips and the quaps.
This season, we're taking a turn about the 90s.
We'll discuss the best period dramas created in the era of girl power, crop tops and grunge.
Time for introductions. We're two best friends who live on different sides of the world.
And we both love period dramas.
I'm Jenny, an English lit nerd and prudish mother of two who once attended a hip-hop class and is universally described as tolerable, I suppose.
I'm Millie, a sexually confused mother of one who has never attended a hip-hop class. I never talk about myself this way, but my friends have described me as a famous wit.
So bad.
So bad.
Intro. So what's the film we're covering today, Jenny? I'll tell you what that film is because it's my segment on the outline. Little Women from 1994, directed by Gillian Armstrong, written by Robin Swicord, based on the novel by Louisa May Alcott. The casting's by Carrie Fraser and Shani Ginsberg, and the main cast, there's a banger of a cast really. We got Winona Ryder, Susan Sarandon, Christian Bale, Kirsten Dunst, Claire Danes, Gabriel Byrne, and then we kind of trail off a bit with Samantha Mathis, she was quite a big deal in the 90s, and Eric Stoltz, who's quite a big deal in the 80s. What's Little Women about, Jenny?
So as the title suggests, Little Women is a kind of Bildungsroman, which follows the growth of the four sisters in the March family, who are living during the time of the American Civil War in New England. The sisters are Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy. And it covers their lives, their loves, their losses, their writing, their reading, their dancing, and their singing.
There's a lot of sing-alongs in this film, which I appreciated, personally.
Yeah. And the main character is Jo. And spoiler alert, her relationship with Laurie is a key plot point where there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there, Mel?
There is.
P-E-R-I-O-D, find out what it means to me. P-E-R-I-O-D, take care, grab a leech.
So sometimes we have strong feelings about the films we discuss. Either they're very meaningful from our past, have a special significance, or just make us feel nostalgic. Mel, do you have any strong feelings about this film?
Pretty much with all these 90s films that we're doing, I like these, they're just completely part of my childhood. So when I was about 10 and 11, I went through a phase of watching Little Women every day after school.
Oh my God.
Every single day. I loved it.
Which character did you relate to?
At the time, I related to Jo.
Sure, obviously.
I used to stay up late writing, and I had a fountain pen that leaked, and so I used to have ink-stained fingers, and I felt very Jo-ish. Watching it now, there was a line Beth says, like, Jo and Meg are going to go to a party, and Beth's like, oh, the idea of going and having to socialize with all these people sounds terrible, and I was like, Beth, preach. Maybe now I identify more with Beth. What about you? Do you have like nostalgia with this film or any really relationship to this film?
Well, confession, I'd actually never watched this film before.
What?
No, I know. I actually only watched it for this podcast, and thank you for bringing it into my life because it was delightful. But no, never watched it before.
I cannot believe that.
No, I'd read it. I was actually one of these annoying people that insisted on, you know, reading the books, and that was the real thing to do. I had a friend who just watched the period drama adaptations, and I really looked down on her.
Was that friend me?
No, it wasn't, but I'm sure I would have been equally judgmental of you had I known you at the time, although the irony of that snobbery is not lost on me, given the nature of this podcast. I guess my main thing with Little Women is, as a romantic at heart, and with that coming a lot of sort of fatalistic, magical thinking, is I became absolutely fixated with Beth's dying words when she was saying to Jo, and I'm paraphrasing here, something like, oh, I was never like you or the others. I never could see myself getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought, oh my gosh, that must be 100% true. If you can't picture something happening, it never will because you're going to die. So I was sure that I was going to die before university because I couldn't picture myself at university. Was sure that I was going to die before I got married because I couldn't picture that either. Mercifully, none of that actually has happened. But I really internalized Beth's words and her way of seeing the world. Even as a 30-something-year-old woman, however old I am, I still think about it. So thanks, Beth, for giving me anxiety. And also, it turned out to be bullshit.
Full of bullshit.
Thanks for nothing.
This is quite rare because I've also read the books. I've read Little Women and Good Wives. Mm-hmm. I haven't read Joe's Boys and Little Men.
Mm-hmm.
But who has?
Period.
Overall impressions of this film?
It's an okay film. Like, I just felt like it was very okay. Like, there's okay love stories. There's an okay love triangle. There's an okay depiction of sisterhood. There's some okay philosophizing about feminism. There's okay costumes. Like, overall, it's okay. That was, like, my hot take from it.
That truly is damning with faint praise. I was struck coming back to it as an adult by how progressive it was. And then possibly even more struck by how much Winona Ryder looked like Keira Knightley in Anna Karenina.
Oh.
Yeah, I spent a good 20 minutes of the film just Googling side-by-side images of them because I needed to prove myself right. And when she cuts her hair, she really does. I also thought a lot about Joe, and I guess we'll talk about this later, and queer theory.
Oh.
And was really struck by how as a child I was gutted that Joe and Laurie didn't end up together.
As a child.
But as an adult, my take had completely changed.
Yes.
And then my final takeaway was, why did they sprinkle rose petals on Beth's bed?
Yes.
I tried Googling it, but I didn't find anything out. Why do they do that when someone dies? Did you find anything?
No, that always confused me. It's just more cleaning, isn't it?
I know.
One thing that struck me about it was how the March families are such cheeky pranksters. Did you notice that? They're all cheeky pranksters. Like, there's the bit where Laurie's like, meet my wife. And then he's like, it's Amy. What? And then there's the bit where Meg has twins. And they're like, you have a daughter. But also, what's this, a son? And then there's a great fake out when Joe thinks that Beth has died. But guess what? She hasn't. It's a cheeky prank.
And Hannah, the maid, is in on it, sobbing away.
Yeah. Yeah. Susan Sarandon was like, Hannah, you go pretend to cry. Then she'll think that Beth died.
You're right. There are so many misdirects. I hadn't thought about it.
I really liked the 2019 Greta Gerwig Little Women. I went and saw it twice at the cinema. I loved it so much because I love Greta Gerwig. And it was really hard to not compare it. Mm. I just spent the whole time comparing it and being like, oh, they did that better. They did that better.
Mm.
But we shouldn't talk about that. So I don't know why I brought it up. I feel stupid.
No, it's not. It's part of your overall impression. I didn't see that one because I think I was giving birth at the time.
Oh, you have to watch it.
And one thing they don't tell you about babies, bloody hard to get them to the cinema. There's like a small, small window.
Period. Casting.
Casting can really make or break a film. What do you think about this one? Do you think it made it or breaked it? Brokered it.
I was just amazed by how many famous people there were in it. Like, amazed.
A lot of famous people in it, yeah.
Not get over how adorable Kirsten Dunst was. So precocious.
Yeah, she's really good.
So well cast. And really mourned when she grew up into Samantha Mathis.
Yeah. I thought there was some really good casting. Winona Ryder was great. Susan Sarandon was great. Christian Bale was great. Kirsten Dunst was great. I liked Gabriel Byrne as Professor Bear because that's quite a difficult character and I thought he did okay with it. I thought that Samantha Mathis was terrible. She was really bad and she didn't have that many scenes. She had like two scenes really. And that, but because you only had two scenes, they were really, her acting in it was really important to kind of carry the stories and she just couldn't. Like, she lost that, like, the charisma of a young Kirsten Dunst. And then Eric Stoltz as Mr. Brooks, I also hated Mr. Brooks so much. He always, even as a child, I remember him giving me the heebie-jeebies. This is a bit of trivia, and it's not even in the trivia segment, but Eric Stoltz was cast as Marty McFly in Back to the Future, and they filmed with him for like a month and then fired him and redid everything with...
Savage.
Michael J. Fox, yeah. And then I thought that the actress that played Meg was all right. Like, it's hard to make Meg likeable because she's so, like, prim and pious and scolding. So it's hard to make her likeable, and I thought she was fine.
Well, my hot take is that Claire Danes is really good at being a corpse.
She is good at being a corpse, isn't she? What always amazes me is how young Claire Danes was when she made Little Women. She would have been in her early teens.
Really?
Like 13, 14.
Oh, she does a very mature performance then.
She really does. Have you ever seen the TV show that she did in the 90s when she, like, at the same time as Little Women, called My So-Called Life?
No, should I?
I mean, I kind of recommend watching it. Like, it's only one season. It's really 90s. And Claire Danes is like 14 and she is amazing.
Period. So my main thought on casting was it was bugging me throughout the whole film who Aunt March was because she has such a distinctive voice. And then it struck me.
She's one of the nuns in Sister Act.
Exactly. She's the nun in Sister Act who has the really sassy line. He's my ideal as a matter of fact.
She's the grumpy choir teacher.
Well, I went on quite a deep dive into IMDb and she plays a lot of nuns.
Well, she's got the face for it, doesn't she?
What the hell does that even mean?
I don't know. I thought she was great as Aunt March, though.
What did you think of a young Christian Bale?
I mean, it's tough because I think Christian Bale in real life isn't a very nice person. He's apparently very aggressive and has big tantrums. And
but all is forgiven for his noble brow.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I don't find him particularly handsome. I watched Little Women the most when I was about 11. And that's kind of when you're starting to develop a sexuality. He has like a place in my heart. So it is quite hard for me to objectively assess whether he's good. I would be interested to know somebody who watched it as an adult. Versus an adult, like, what your feelings are.
I mean, I felt like he was a bit too much of a cad, even before he becomes a douchebag later in the film. Yeah, but I did think that he had really good chemistry with Winona Ryder.
Mm.
I thought they were really sweet together, to the point where you really rooted for them and were so sad when it didn't work out.
Which is kind of the main thing, is those two actors have to have good chemistry.
Susan Sarandon was good.
Yeah, but I mean, when is she not good?
Yeah, that's true. And also, just how good was Winona Ryder?
Winona Ryder, 1990s Winona Ryder, before she kind of started looking spooked out all the time. It's just amazing.
Yeah, actually, it was refreshing to see her not looking miserable about the Upside Down.
Yeah, but instead looking sad about Victorian ailments.
Yes, and restrictions on women.
Period. Shall we move on to what is arguably one of the top three most important things about period dramas, the fashions? Do you have any big takeaways from the fashions, the looks of this from this film?
To be honest, just don't like Victorian dress styles as much as Regency.
I was going to ask you that. Do you prefer the Victorian nipped tiny waist big skirt or the Empire Line Austin dresses?
Empire Line. I mean, they just look a lot more comfortable.
That's true.
I don't know if they were, but those Victorian gowns are just so restrictive and uncomfortable looking. You couldn't do anything.
It's like Mommy's always going on about it though, isn't she?
True. So I guess that given that I don't particularly enjoy Victorian fashion, my favourite moment was actually Joe getting up in drag.
Yes, I commented on that. Joe's boy drag was amazing. So good, especially when she's got the beard and moustache drawn on her.
It's so good.
You know, I have a sister, and me and my sister, we definitely used to dress up in drag and write a fake newspaper together. It's just what sisters do.
Did you actually?
No.
Aw, I could have really believed that. I know that I wrote heaps of newspapers by myself, though I didn't dress up in drag, which I suppose is kind of nice because didn't feel we had to, you know? Mm. Women can be newspaper writers too.
Yeah, that's true.
I also really enjoyed how Joe had a fabulous nightcap.
It's her writing outfit. That's in the book a lot, eh? That in the book she talks about her writing outfit that she has. Growing up, I always really loved Jo's big curly hair, and I always wanted hair like that. I still do really want hair like that, and I even like it when it's in a little choppy bob as well. What I quite like seeing is watching this from the 90s, and they're all period pieces, so they're all meant to be set back in the day, but they're still, like, they're so 90s. Like, all the boys' hairdos, that, like, floppy hairdo.
So true.
And I'm pretty sure Laurie even has, Christian Bale even has, like, blonde highlights in his little floppy Hugh Grant-esque hair. And Kirsten Dunst and Samantha Mathis have that, like, wonky 1990s little piss fringe. The little tiny short fringe. That kind of stuck out to me. I like all the shots of the dresses at the balls.
Yeah, lovely.
There was like quite a few shots of the dresses all spinning around, and I thought that looked cool. But I bet it was just horrible to wear.
I feel like the colour story of this film is a lot of very dark, dulled jewel tones, and the clothing feels very heavy as well. And I think in Regency era, there's a lot of white and light pastel colours, and so it feels kind of more fun and frothy.
Any linguistic fireworks that you were like, boom, loved that.
Bow, bow, bow. I mean, yeah, I just love how melodramatic Jo is. Well, all of them, really. I also just really appreciated how Louisa M. Alcott did a fantastic job creating really idiosyncratic voices for each of the sisters.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like Meg is always chastising, reminding her sisters about propriety and decorum. Amy is always incredibly over the top.
Mispronounces words.
Yes, her mispronunciations and malapropisms are so endearing. A favourite line for me might be when Jo and the others are speculating on Laurie, and they say he looks like he has a secret, a tragic European secret. Yeah. How about you?
I mean, I agree. I like the overwroughtness of them because they're teenagers, and that's what you're like when you're a teenager. And when you have fights with your siblings, not necessarily your sisters, but your siblings, and you tell them that you wish that they were dead and stuff, and that's very true to life. And I liked that a lot. I thought I liked the fights that they have as sisters. I thought that those were good touches. Like the bit where Amy burns her book. Like, I don't know if I would have ever been so evil as to burn one of my siblings' books, but I kind of can understand that, like, evil rage that you get in at your siblings. Like, I once killed my brother's Tamagotchi.
Unforgivable.
In a jealous rage.
How do you even kill a Tamagotchi?
You know, they have like a little black reset button on the back.
You didn't.
And I got a pen and killed it.
I did a similarly evil thing to my brother when I was younger, which I'm pretty sure he still hasn't forgiven me for. And to be fair, it was just a real dick move by me. Basically, we had a shared Pokemon, Game Boy game, Pokemon Red. And we had worked over several months, possibly even years, to build our Pokemon collection.
Mm-hmm.
But then one time he had the opportunity to trade a Mew,
mm-hmm.
and he took it when he was at a friend's house,
mm-hmm.
traded the Mew. And then when I realized this, I flew into such a rage that I deleted the entire game. Yeah, I know. It was just awful of me.
Oh my gosh.
Because I just couldn't handle not having been part of that trade and not being in control. And so we lost everything, all the progress. It was punishment for us both. And yeah, not great moment for me. Not a nice kid. The other really evil thing I did as a child tenuously links with Little Women. Obviously, an iconic moment of horror in this film is when Jo burns Meg's curl off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I didn't do that, but what I did was arguably much worse because it was calculated. So when I went to the hairdressers, I used to be very sort of emotional and attached to my hair, pun intended. And I used to collect it off the floor, thinking someday this will come in handy. So then finally the day came when I decided to use my plan. Pete was playing on the Game Boy and I wanted to turn, all revolved around the Game Boy. And So I gathered the hair and I ran in crying to my mum. And I said, Mum, please cut off my hair.
Jenny May, that's so evil and good. You were too clever.
Fully evil and conniving, I know. And Mum told off Pete, and he was only little. He was only probably about 7 or 8.
You were like, you never know when you're going to need to stuff a pillow when you don't have any feathers handy. You were like, I'm going to use this to be evil.
Yeah, eventually I confessed, I think. I hope I confessed. But probably one of the worst things I've ever done.
I did awful things when I was a child, but I can't really remember them, which isn't great content for this, but I'm sure I did equally horrible, horrible things.
Period.
So there's lots of lines that stuck in my head because I used to watch it a lot as a child. So it's hot, I hate it, but like, Marmy's home! It's the first line of the movie, it's so nauseating.
Did you used to say that to your mum?
Didn't you sometimes? Maybe I probably did sometimes say it to my mum, but in like a knowing, like, isn't this so American and cheesy kind of way.
I read that Louisa M. Alcott's accent was non-rhotic, so they don't pronounce R's. So that actually it's not like Marmy, but basically Mammy, or with an American accent, like Mammy. And apparently Louisa M. Alcott was one of the first people to attempt to write it down.
I did read that too.
Interesting, eh?
It is interesting. I also always loved the bit where when Jo cuts her hair and Amy's like, oh, Jo, how could you? You're one beauty.
I really love that too. I've actually been quoting that one since watching the film.
And then another one that I think about all the time, another line that I think about all the time, I don't really know why, is when Beth is dying and she says, she's like, I can be brave like you. And I actually say that quite a lot, like if I'm ever being melodramatic or whatever, and then I'm like gonna do something, I go, I can be brave like you.
Period.
I quite liked the bit where Meg's like, must you always talk about corsets? Mommy's like, Meg, do I? And you know what I hope if I'm ever a mother and I have children, they're like, Mom, must you always talk about periods? Or like, Mom, must you always talk about destroying capitalism? Like, I hope that my kids are like that.
I really enjoyed very proper Meg chastising Jo for her terrible language. And she says, Jo, please don't say awful, it's slang.
I know. There's so many times that she's like telling her to not say words that then aren't bad words.
But also, what is awful even slang for? Is it because it's a contraction of like full of awe? Maybe that's what she means by slang.
Jenny, must you say slang? It's slang.
It's so dumb. Amy has amazing lines. Very relatable content when she is in school. You know, the times have changed, technology's changed, but kids haven't. When she says, if you don't have limes, you may as well be dead.
Yeah. What were the big fads at your school? For me, it was pogs. Little plastic discs, pogs, and then yo-yos.
And not marbles for you? For us, it was definitely marbles. Knuckle bones at one point, and Pokemon cards. Do you remember how extreme it was with Pokemon cards that schools actually had to have policies about trading because kids were getting ripped off or bullied and stuff?
And we also had football stickers. That was also a big trend as well, my school. Oh, I also like the bit where he's like, did you really put snow on your ankle?
Yeah, I put that actually as a top romantic moment.
Kirsten Dunst is so charismatic in that film, like just how she says her lines. Well, shall we talk about the sexual tension and the romance in this movie?
Ooh, they're looking at each other across a room. Ooh, he held her hand as he led her into a carriage.
Okay, I think the biggest question is, should, in a perfect world, would Jo and Laurie have ended up together? Was Louisa May Alcott wrong?
So as a child, I definitely wanted them to end up together. And I know that Louisa M. Alcott got a lot of hate for not ending the novel that way. But then coming back to it as an adult, I can see that Jo loves Laurie in a completely platonic way. And actually, were she to marry him, it would just be to placate him and I don't want that for her. So, yeah, I'm glad that they didn't end up together. In fact, I think it was a very bold move. And I read as well, as I'm sure that you did, that Louisa May Alcott actually didn't want Jo to end up with anyone. She wanted her to remain single. She herself didn't marry.
I haven't read that, but, oh man, so interesting with the 2019 film. But anyway, so that's one of the things that I wrote and then deleted, is like, it's interesting because this, then I cannot remember it about the book, but this, the 1990s film is obviously, is very feminist and has like, it's trying to make feminist statements. But then at the end of the day, it is about everybody finding love or dying.
Yeah.
And then I kept on being, but then I thought, is that a but? Like, is it anti-feminist to find love? I don't know if it is. You know, it's meant to be feminist and it's meant to be about women's ambitions and women pursuing their ambitions. But then it just ends up with them getting married because it's fine. You can pursue your ambitions and fall in love.
Yeah, it is interesting because if I think about Disney films that were coming out around the same time, all the princesses or heroines do get married, but they do have a choice in their partner. And that's sort of the baby step forward. The other thing I was thinking watching this film was, is Jo queer?
Mm.
And imagining that there must have been quite a lot of academic work done through queer theory into examining that question.
Mm. I think in the books, Jo is queerer than in the film. Because in the books, I remember there being a lot about like the clothes that Jo wears being really mask.
Mm-hmm.
And her kind of embracing her masculine side a lot more in the book, being more of a tomboy. She's kind of just more awkward in the film. More awkward in her femininity in the film.
Yeah, I think she's just not interested in femininity, especially in the same way as Meg, as a kind of foil. You know, she just chucks her hair back, she doesn't care about the balls.
Period. My big take from watching it this time was, Friedrich is a manic pixie dream boy.
Okay, unpack that for me.
So manic pixie dream girl is, you've got like an awkward boy and then this girl who doesn't have agency beyond being interesting and then making the boy into a better person. So in this situation, you've got Jo, an awkward girl or little woman, who meets an interesting, quirky guy. You know, he plays the violin. He has like specific tastes around coffee, but most importantly, I'd say, is that he doesn't really have any agency beyond his relationship with Jo. Like, what, he doesn't have ambitions really, or storyline, or a driver beyond his relationship with Jo. And his role in the story is to make Jo a better writer.
In my mind, manic pixie dream girls are always sort of quite light and happy. I guess the manic part of that. And I feel like Professor Bear is incredibly serious and quite a depressing character. Do you think that?
He is quite somber, yeah. He's a depressive pixie dream boy. And maybe he doesn't have like an arc and a very fleshed out character because Louisa didn't want to put him in.
Yeah, another thing I don't like about Bear is that he like chastises Jo for writing Victorian melodrama, which is looked down upon as a genre as being frivolous and infantile and silly. And it made me quite sad for Jo because she got a lot of joy out of writing it. And it also made me quite sad for Louisa May Alcott because apparently she hated writing Little Women and found it really dull. Sent it off to her publisher or her editor, whoever, who said, yeah, it is actually quite boring. And then it was only when he gave it to his daughter, who said, this is amazing, that they ended up publishing it. So I guess it just shows how some genres, such as realism, which supposedly Louisa May Alcott was a forerunner of, are so elevated above others, even if they're a bit joyless.
Her and her family were in poverty for so long. And writing was how she made her money, and she could make, and that's how she saw it. Like, she saw it like, I can make money from this. I can make money from melodrama. And so she wrote heaps of different genres and heaps of different types of books. And for her, it was
this is how I can make money, as opposed to this is my pure art. That's one thing that I wrote down that I did like about a conversation between Joe and Friedrich, where Friedrich says, Friedrich criticizes her writing of being like, oh, it's a bit shit. But then he says, but I don't want to be your teacher, like, which is kind of him saying, I respect you and I'm going to let you do you. And I liked that line in it because there is like an age difference and an experience difference in that relationship. And so for him to say, I don't want to be your teacher and instead I'm going to bring you oranges and coffee whilst you write, I liked that. What do you think about Laurie and Amy's pairing?
Yeah, I don't know. Not the biggest fan. I do understand Laurie's desperate urge to get into the March family, though. Like, if Joe won't have me, I'm going to find some way in.
Mm.
And at one point I wanted your and my family to unite in such a way, not just for the wonderful surname potential, but unfortunately didn't quite happen. So Amy and Laurie, I don't know, not convinced by the chemistry. And can they ever really be happy?
I think that this film does it really poorly. I think in theory it's possible for them to make their pairing make sense. You know, they're both kind of more fun-loving characters. They're more in the world and less like gloomy artists, which is kind of what Joe is going for. Like, they both would want to have quite a nice, comfortable life, and that would be a priority for them. So I think in like a not very romantic way that makes sense for them to be together. But this film doesn't make that love story work at all, because they've got like pretty much one scene together, yeah, where they're just horrible to each other. He says to her, my compositions are like your paintings, mediocre copies of another man's genius. And then she doesn't even like respond to that. It's like, that's a really savage thing to say. And then like, it's a really poorly acted, poorly written scene that has a huge amount of work to do and doesn't. For all that this film is about love story, has three love stories, none of those three love stories are particularly good.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's showing that different kinds of love suit different kinds of people. And ultimately it is, as the title suggests, about the little women.
Yeah.
The sisters and the different paths that they take. It's a maturation novel, like a classic Bildungsroman. And so the novel's romances aren't sweeping and exhilarating, but they're also perhaps not the focus. And I thought it was quite interesting to look at the context of the time, that the year that this was coming out was the same time that Fight Club and Pulp Fiction came out, which were very macho-driven films.
Yeah.
And this film is celebrating femininity in its different forms.
Yeah, it's a very feminine film, and it's written by a woman, directed by a woman. As much as like it's about love stories and sisterhood, it's also about, I think the main thing that it's about is like women's lives and women's ambitions, and women's stories are important.
Just to end this segment, I wanted to lower the tone by citing what I felt was the moment of peak sexual tension, the passing of an orange between Friedrich and Joe.
Oh yeah. That orange is very sensual.
Loaded with Edenic symbolism. But also, you know, the kids are playing with limes, but the adults, they're dealing with oranges. Nice close-up of the hands. Very hot.
Period.
She drinks a tea drink. She drinks a port drink. She drinks a spruce beer. She drinks an orange wine.
Is there a drinking game that you could do to this movie? For Homeland, there's a drinking game anytime Claire Danes' chin wobbles. She's got like a great chin wobble cry, because Claire Danes is an amazing crier. But then I was thinking, is Emma Thompson a better crier?
Oh, they're two top criers.
But I mean, it actually only happens like three times, so you couldn't get smashed off of it.
Which is certainly the aim anytime I'm watching a period drama.
Other one is anytime anyone's preachy, because they're also like friggin' preachy. Don't say awful, it's slang. And then there's Mommy always doing her feminist rant.
Yeah, true. They're always moralizing those marches. The only other game I thought of was every time Amy mentions her nose, she's always talking about how it's a blemish and she has the peg on her nose to try and make it smaller. And
that's a good one.
That little woman is vain.
Period. Does it hold up? Like, this is a film from the 90s based on source material from the 19th century. Are there things in this film today we're like, oh, or are we like, oh, ahead of its time?
I actually think this has aged quite well. There's lots of progressive feminist things, some quite cool socialist-y ideas about looking after the poor.
So I think the things that kind of aged well are small references to the marches being liberals and radicals. There's talking about how they don't wear silk or cotton, that they're temperance people. The temperance movement was really strongly connected to the women's suffrage movement and the abolitionist movement in the 19th century. And it's also mentioned that the father's school was shut down for letting in a black child. And all of that stuff is based on the Alcott family. Branson Alcott, who was Louisa May Alcott's father, he was a teacher. And he set up quite a few like hippie schools, one of them in Boston, which got shut down for allowing two black girls. This was in the middle of the 19th century.
That's quite amazing.
One of the things that Friedrich and Joe talk about is transcendentalism. Branson Alcott was a founder of a transcendentalist movement, and their family, the Alcotts, were family friends with Henry David Thoreau and like really big thinkers of the 19th century. It's really hard because I come from a context of being part of hippie communes and stuff. And Branson Alcott, when Louisa was about 11, he started this hippie commune where they were all vegan.
Wow, that's amazing.
And they were all vegan, and he was so anti-capitalist that he wouldn't allow like any money. They weren't allowed like heaps of different clothing fibers because of slavery or because of animal abuse. I kind of had some sympathy with these ideas, but then the thing is that it resulted in the family essentially starving and being really poor, and this was in Massachusetts in winter, so really cold.
Yeah, I'd read that in Little Women they are never as poor as the Alcotts actually were in real life.
And there was also some quite sexist ideas that like the women in the community weren't allowed to be part of like their philosophical discussions. So I think that Little Women is an idealized version of Louisa May Alcott's childhood. I think it's quite interesting that her father had some like really good ideas, but didn't have a very human-centered execution, shall we say? And so in this, he's like not really in the story.
Yeah, he's really conspicuously absent. He's just this benevolent and much-loved figure. Were there any other bits that you found awkward or problematic? What about the bit where Meg bumps into Laurie at the ball?
Laurie like fully slut-shamed her and touched her on the boob.
I know, it was awful. That bit made me so uncomfortable.
It was horrible. Yeah, it reveals a whole new Meg and then like touches the lace on her boob, which is just very inappropriate. And even when he goes and apologizes and says that he was horrible to her, he still is a little bit like, but your dress is still so stupid. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of trying to make one another better. And one of the key differences from the book is the book constantly alludes to Pilgrim's Progress. It's very much about moral education.
Which they've kind of maybe switched for like a feminist education.
You spin me right off, baby, right off. Like Joey, baby, let's make a spin off.
What's one of the like? The only one that I thought of, and it's not really a spin-off, but I thought it would be so interesting to have a biopic about Louisa May Alcott's life.
Is there one? There must be one.
I don't know if there is one, but there should be one because it's so interesting. Like, she knew all these people, like having these woke parents, but how being a child in that scenario is sometimes quite hard. Oh, it'd be so good.
Yeah, listeners, if that does exist, let us know. And if it doesn't, someone make it.
Yeah.
My spin-off idea was for the prequel to Little Women, Littler Women. I would like to see what they were like when they were younger, and I'd like it to be told from Mommy's perspective as well.
I was thinking like Mommy's story, but then Mommy's portrayed as such a pious, like morally perfect character that I was like, is that interesting? But then I suppose it's how they're viewing her as opposed to potentially how she really is.
So like the producer or the writer, I can remember, he would go up and would go to the studios and be like, I want to make Little Women, and they'll be like, interesting, have you thought about a modern reboot, a modern remake. But I don't know how you could possibly do a modern retelling. That's what it's called.
I mean, I think you could. How could you do a good modern retelling would be the question.
But the thing is, I don't think it necessarily worked because on one hand, they are really modern characters, like especially Jo seems like a woman that's not of her own time. But then so much of it, it just seemed very 19th century, the influence of Pilgrim's Progress. And
yeah, their morals. Yeah. I can imagine Amy having like a big TikTok following, being an Instagram influencer. Kind of,
and then Jo
having mommy like take her down,
and Jo being like, "Why is your like TikTok? Like, it's you wasting your time on this vapid thing."
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Well, we've done it. We should pitch it to the studio.
We've done it.
Maybe
Beth would die of COVID. Wouldn't that be awful? I know. I feel like that would really bring it screaming into the 21st century.
So to use the currency of Little Women, how would you rate this on a scale of citrus fruit where orange is the ultimate?
Oh, how many oranges? How many seductive oranges would you give?
I'd suggest this film could be a mandarin. Had all the potential, a bit of the look of the orange, but not quite the satisfaction.
I mean, I'm just thinking so much about this. I'm overthinking it because I actually prefer a mandarin to an orange because oranges are so difficult to eat. But that's not the point.
No, more like if an orange is the ultimate in seductive satisfaction.
You know what's the ultimate? The ultimate, is a Christingle. On the orange scale.
What, like with the candle stuck in and the lollies?
And the lollies and the red tape signify Christ's sacrifice on the cross.
What's more romantic than that?
I would give the 2019 Little Women a Christingle. I friggin' loved it. Mm-hmm. I would give this one a mandarin. And your definition of a mandarin. Like, it's got the potential to be good, but it was okay. I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable. Watch it, but it's not setting the world on fire.
So just to revert to our old system, would you give this film a thumbs up?
I give it a tentative. I give it a thumbs up, but not a glowing thumbs up.
I'd give it a sideways to slightly north facing thumbs up. That's it from us this week. Join us next episode where we will tackle the beast that is the BBC's iconic 1995 Pride and Prejudice.
You've been listening to Period Drama Queens with Jenny May and Millie Day.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Instagram @Period Drama Queens. See you next time.
Bye.